Welcome again to Get Lit with Literature. This is Monk. You can find out more at allbook-books.com. This is part 3 of Sacred Sexuality. Like I said, it could do umpteen, maybe later on. I also wanted to mention that last time when talking about the second chakra genitalia area as part of the foundation on the Kabbalistic Tree of Life, I did not mention also, since there's a front and a side and a back view of the human being, that includes the buttocks. Also an area, a lot of energy and strength, symbol of strength in that area. So that's just to flesh out the big picture, so to speak. Sorry, I can't avoid a few jokes when you talk about sexuality. It just has to be in there. So this time I want to mention a few ideas, and some of them are going to be, again, worth an entire show or an entire book. But by mentioning them, at least people can then go look and find out more for themselves. This is kind of like an icebreaker type of series in a non-bookish way, because that's part of this ongoing series, is an observation I have made, which little kids, 3 years old, 5 years old, while talking to them, having a good time, just talking about the trees and whatever, just sort of voluntarily touching themselves. It seemed to be like just part of the day and part of the pleasure and the routine. So I think somewhere, without being a child psychologist or having studied this, I think there is an innate ability for a human being to be in touch with their own body, literally, and that somewhere along the lines the societal pressures say, no, don't do that. That's not appropriate. And obviously there's a time and the place. However, I think there's a certain something happens that the innate ability along those lines gets suppressed in favor of the more social religious accepted social mores and such like. I remember as a teen in puberty getting on a bus in the city and being worried or afraid, like, what if I got a hard on and it would stick out of my jeans and people would see? So, I mean, there's something I could say is be like, wow, that's great. That's exciting. Something to be proud of. But instead, it created a sense of neurosis or social phobia or whatever other labels I could put to it. So I think society, there's a huge amount of whatever put on people's head trips to deal with all this topic of sexuality, which is why I'm mentioning again just briefly a lot of these topics. And as not to lure you to buy the book, but as I put in my recent book, there's among other cultures in ancient Greece what's called herms, or sacred stones, which were phallic road markers that were guideposts. You know, instead of seeing, you know, 40 miles to Louisville or 300 miles to Boston, you know, you would see a phallic stone marker, and that was part of the process of figuring out where to go and what to do. So much of the history of this ancient knowledge, whatever you call it, customs, have gotten subverted in the name of repression and guilt and shame and distortedness, as I mentioned in the first part, with pedophilia and huge violence and sexual abuse towards Native women and all cultures, really. I think most of the statistic I remember hearing was that most, a huge amount, like 50-70% of domestic violence is couples or you know, relationship related. So this is a huge epidemic, traumatic stuff going on here. So a few of the what I would say like the antidotes I'll refer to. One is in ancient Greece, and I had heard of this mentioned for Jewish people as well, a romantic relationship between an older male and a younger male, usually in his teens. And in ancient Greece, a few of these bits will come from Wikipedia, although I don't always go by what they say, but for basic information to start the conversation, called pederasty. And this was as a kind of initiation and a rite of passage and a teaching in a helpful way to socialize or to educate in various different ways. Again, you can look into that. But that nowadays people just, oh my God, and raise their eyebrows at how could that be okay to have an older man and a younger male have a sexual relationship? And I'm adding a note that a pederasty also had, it could be sexual or chaste, not sexual. And some were in favor, some areas were in favor of it, some were not, according to an article that I saw. And the word root, actually from the Greek, the roots are boy, lover. So again, that could be sexual or not sexual, but in a caring, sort of mentoring fashion is the gist that I'm presenting here. My theory is that because these accepted ways that were done in a conscious way, because that got repressed, that is where the urges have not ever been dealt with. So we have these side effects of church pedophilia, Boy Scouts, schools, and such like that. So that's one example. Another example is various terms for it. Sacred prostitution, temple prostitution, a temple whore. These are all not in a negative sense. But again, these were used as a... it could be like a spiritual initiatory experience. It could be... I haven't studied this in depth. It's kind of, in a conscious way, with a sense of whatever. Maybe there was no payment for it. It was like a service that was provided, and however that happened. But even just on Wikipedia, to show how wide this is, it lists ancient Near East, Sumer, Babylonia, Hittites, Phoenicia, Hebrew, India, Japan, Indonesia, Maya, Aztec, Inca, ancient Rome, signs of sacred prostitution with Minoan Crete, temples of Aphrodite, on and on and on. In ancient Egyptian, it's called a hierodule, H-I-E-R-O-D-U-L-E, contrasted with the modern-day porn industry, where it's a huge amount of commodification and physical abuse and all kinds of stuff. So I think that, again, another example of looking at some of the original ways of how the topic of sexuality was approached. And one more would be what's called Tantra, T-A-N-T-R-A, which comes from the East India. And the Sanskrit word tantram means a loom, a warp, or a weave. From ton, stretch, extend, expand, and tra, instrument, technique, that which liberates. So if you web search that, you will see what, mostly it gets into sexuality and how to have the best tantric sex, but that's really just westernized. That's westernized stuff. The original teachings of that are more about a consciousness. I transliterated that and give it my own definition: stretching your consciousness so as to liberate from limited experiences, perceptions, and personas, and learning how to consciously be played by various energies. Because I've actually done presentations about this at libraries called Personality and the Art of Tantra, is that Tantra is an ongoing thing. It basically is people that you hang out with, you rub off on, and you become like them, whether family, friends, your local club, however, and so you pick up some of the energy of that person. So to do it consciously is to know where that energy is coming from. So that's where the sexuality is the most intimate form of Tantra, because you're literally mixing energies with somebody physically. So you take on and give some intense stuff going on there. So that's where the whole fixation on the sexual Tantra happens. But I think that a lot of a misunderstanding about relationships is that in a tantric sense, each person has an energy, and you know, whether masculine, feminine, whatever, as you go and sort of sample someone else's energy, you take on some of that energy, and they take on some of your energy. So you learn, and there may be an immediate attraction, and in a long-term or lifelong relationship, that magnetism gets maintained. But a lot of times people are looking for a long-term relationship, but once they have mixed their energies, so to speak, then the sort of attraction or purpose goes away. But meanwhile, so many people work so hard at trying to improve their relationships, which can be done, but then again, there is very little acceptance in the society, or it's maybe more so nowadays, but not expressed much about, you know, in a way, we're very much like bees going to different flowers and making it all in the process. Well, this metaphor that comes to mind is we're all making our own honey, and sometimes we bop around, and there's nothing wrong with that. But to get stuck on, you know, one flower when you want to go see another flower. And I'll leave it with one 2004, a poem I wrote called Spirit Mingles. And I give a little bits of different cultures, and starts off with, he was childless along with his cross to bear. All that talk of procreation, so how come father didn't want his seed passed on? Spoke with riddles, parables, like a Zen master. Because I thought about that one day, I was like, the Christianity is so entrenched in marriage and the family. But then again, the supposed leader, Jesus, he was, as far as I know, he was a single guy. So something's going on there. Anyway, I hope you've enjoyed this. And if you have any questions, feel free to reach out or want to be pointed in a certain direction on a topic. I think, again, it's a very important topic. Basic gist is that I wanted to present was to open some doors to different information and to dispel the epidemic of abuse and egregious misappropriation of other people's physical bodies and of the earth, that whole psychology that does that. So that requires, I think, relooking at what sexuality is and finding ways to celebrate rather than judge and denigrate. So thank you for listening. Have a good one.